You need to provide enough of a glimpse of what the future looks like and what the migration path is. Even though at the same time you need to hold in your head, like, this is like a hypothesis, right? It might never come to pass, but you really need to think out into the future.
Hi, I'm David, and this is Build to Succeed from Very Good Ventures. Today, we're talking with Sam Moore, VP Architecture at Betterment. In this episode, we talk about how Betterment pulls off technology transformations, including their successful migration to Flutter. This is a must-listen for anyone wondering how to improve their technical organization. So, let's get into it. All right. Hi, Sam. How's it going? Thanks for joining today.
Hi, David. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing terrific. Thanks again for coming on the show. And wanted to start with just a general, I know you've a recent dad, moved to the suburbs. Just curious how that's been going. How's it being a dad and how's it changed things for you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's been great. I mean, it's fun. It's challenging. It puts things in perspective. I think making it through the early stages of being a parent has definitely put like what difficult is into perspective, which is actually, you know, it's kind of great because we face a lot of challenges in the work that we do and it's easy to get lost and, oh my God, how am I ever going to figure this out? And, you know, when you face those challenges with taking care of a new loved one, it's a totally different ballgame. So it's fun though. Love it.
Totally agree. I think it definitely impacts how you are a manager and how you show up at work, not only because you're tired.
But, yes, never been more tired in my life.
Yeah, absolutely. Has it changed how you've been a manager, like as a leader?
Yeah, I would say it has. I mean, I think, you know, once my brain started working again after not getting sleep for a long time, as is often people's experience, you know, my background processes started crunching the information I was collecting and immediately seeing the relationship between like just like the psychology of children, infants, toddlers, and, you know, full grown, you know, adult humans. And just it's so hard not to see the similarities in the work that I'm doing. I think a lot, I've always had a strong affinity for kind of coaching and like asking questions and like trying to be a sounding board for people. And I've always appreciated that kind of interaction with other people. And it ends up, you know, my daughter's 2.5 years old now, so she's firmly in the toddler stage. And there is just so much overlap there, right? You can't just tell them what to do. You have to like get them to think about what's going on and kind of guide them through things by asking questions and leading them. There's, you know, things about learning about setting boundaries and like what boundaries actually are. And they're like not things that you tell people not to do, but rather like won't let them do. And so, yeah, there's a lot of overlap. There's definitely a lot of overlap to how it comes into the workplace.
Totally. In my experience as a parent, it's been one of the cool things is to learn things again, right? To like see somebody learn something new that I think as we grow, right? Our minds get these layers of learning and we just kind of jump ahead to all these conclusions. And it's just so fun to watch like a kid growing and learning to learn something brand new that like literally their brain has never learned before. And then you see it like when you do something cool and new and different, like at work or as an adult, and you're like, oh, beneath all these layers I've built over my life, there's still that like very raw, like just learn something new. And that what enthusiasm you get from that is super cool. I think just kids like really distill some of those basic like human mentality aspects. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. It definitely just sort of like boils things down to their essence, right? You just see things for what they are from first principles, right? Like as a human learning a thing, it's pretty fascinating. It also, as you know, having kids, just having a reminder of, you know, how much patience it takes to sort of collaborate with somebody or cooperate or get them to cooperate. And how being a parent, it's like a good reminder of, you know, how to maintain that and how to know like when you're at the extent of your patience and processing your own feelings, right? I think that's like a reminder that's actually been really rewarding for me is it's been easier to think about like, okay, I'm feeling frustrated in work right now, right? Or I'm feeling really excited about this thing because there are things I'm trying to teach my kid, right? And I'm trying to be like, oh yeah, that's what that feeling is. Okay, let me help myself process that, which is, it's fascinating. Just like being a, I don't know, a stronger human on like the you know, emotional and cognitive level.
Yeah, that's really true. Like we spend so much time teaching our kids to be in touch with their feelings, but then as adults, it's like, no, ignore those.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, we've established that you're a parent and it sounds like a pretty good one. So why don't we take a step back and do you want to just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about who you are and your experience and kind of kick us off maybe why we're here today?
Yeah. So I'm Sam Moore. I'm VP of Architecture at Betterment. I've worked at Betterment for a little over 11 years at this point. I work as an engineer. I spent most of my career and most of my time at Betterment as an individual contributor, working on primarily sort of full stack, sort of front end to back end to the database product functionality. Worked in the background on our trading systems, our you know, front end infrastructure, our AWS cloud infrastructure, and you know, the way that I came to meet you was a jaunt that I did into working on our mobile platform. But before Betterment, I worked a few different places doing similar work in engineering, web development. I kind of came up into software through the, you know, web development age. And so I lived through a lot of the bad old days of web development, saw the early emergence of mobile development, and have, you know, try to find interesting ways to bring that experience and that knowledge to bear on the problems that we're trying to solve in our business.
That's awesome. And you're right. I think you mentioned that how we got to know each other was the mobile project and replatforming to Flutter. And that was a big undertaking and also quite early in that. And I think you specifically and leading this for Betterment, of course, as part of it was kind of pioneers, I think, of Flutter in the ecosystem. You guys got into it really early and embarked on a very large undertaking, I think. So I was just curious if maybe like, you know, tell us some of that, like how did that happen and, you know, what have we learned? And I think that's going to be the bulk of our conversation today is like, how do we effectively transform technology? But to take us back, do you want to kind of give an overview maybe of Betterment's technology stack or like what kind of led you to that moment?
Like, I'll say a quick thing about Betterment. So Betterment is the largest independent digital financial advisor. We operate in the United States exclusively. Our product is an advice and investing platform that's offered in three different flavors. We do a direct-to-consumer thing. That's kind of what OG original Betterment was, sort of on Betterment.com and our mobile app. The second piece of it is what's called Betterment at Work. It's a product that we sell to employers to provide benefits to their employees. So it's like a 401k and other sort of suite of benefits that they can use through our same sort of great mobile experience that the consumer product delivers. And the last is this like advisor platform that we offer to financial advisors to be able to manage their clients using our software. And it's like a full custodial platform for them. So, you know, that's kind of how Betterment exists in the world. It's a like a, you know, US centered financial services company. And as I said, we have a web platform and a mobile platform and multiple different web presences. So that has informed, you know, a lot of our technology strategy, how we pick technology, how we, you know, scale our team. And we've always put a heavy focus on, I guess I'd call it like consensus, but also like alignment and trying to sort of leverage shared technology in all the things that we build to the extent that it makes sense. So having like fewer different ways to do the same thing is like a value or a principle that we have. So, you know, when I started at Betterment, our technology stack was, well, we didn't have a mobile app at the time, and our technology stack was Java, written mostly by our CEO, who wasn't an engineer, and a bunch of JavaScript for our web experience. And, you know, in the time that I've been here, we've then evolved that and grown the team from, you know, 5 engineers to 150 engineers. And that's sort of necessitated taking new approaches to the different technology and has really demanded that we figure out how to adopt technology that works well for us and the needs of our company as those needs have changed. One of the biggest ones that we undertook was actually transitioning from our monolithic Java backend system to a Ruby on Rails set of applications, which is like, sometimes we joke about it, it's like the anti-Twitter. Like Twitter's infamously moved from Ruby on Rails to like Java and Scala. And we kind of like did the reverse. We might actually be moving in the other direction again now, but you know, years ago, the priorities were very much clear that we need to be able to build stuff and throw it away, right? And doing that with rigid strategies and kind of crusty old techniques wasn't working well for us. So we, you know, pioneered an adoption strategy there. We also got rid of our cruddy JavaScript strategy and, you know, eventually started embracing a new one. So we have this in our DNA, right? Finding the way to adopt technology that's sort of the minimum amount of technology to be able to deliver great products for our customers and transitioning from one technology strategy to another.
And so crucially for you guys specifically, I mean, I think what you were just describing there in that counterpoint to Java, to Ruby or back or whatever, you know, different things. There's no one way. Different companies have different benefits, requirements, things that they want to do. And I think that's just an important part of it. And I think that as you and I've talked and learned about your approach, it's not just about which technology is better. It's really like for our culture, for our team, for our unique objectives, not like what I read on Reddit as the top post of the thing I should be using. It's really thoughtful, mindful approach to what works for you and your team.
Yeah, absolutely. Like decisions are made in context, and we can't pretend like Facebook, Meta, Google, Amazon, VGV, Betterment, like we're all the same context, right? Like we're not. We have different needs, right? Like I was at a conference recently talking to somebody and they were like, how do I get my team to work on more platform investments or something? I was like, I can't answer that question abstractly, right? Like, what is your business? What stage is your business at? What's your current technology strategy? Like how does it work, right? Like, those are all the things that factor in because the right answer for one person or one group of people is not going to be the same for everyone else.
Totally.
I think it doesn't mean we can't learn from each other. It just means that learning isn't about just reapplying the same strategy, right? It's about, well, why did it work and why didn't it work?
Right, right. And part of it is evolving. You know, I think most of the product stories that you read on the internet or that people celebrate, they tend to be like some bright, new, shiny company or thing that was built. But the real situation for most engineering teams out there, especially if a company's been around for a reasonable amount of time, is you're maintaining a lot of stuff that have been built over time, and you're trying to pivot your technology strategy and update things as you go. And I think that's a lot of the stories that you and I have talked about over the years are really interesting, right? So many companies have these like impediments to their organization, and technology gets in the way. Technology debt is a very common phrase for that. And rebuilding or adjusting or adapting is really, really hard. It's really hard to get like the executive buy-in, the motivation. And one of the things that I think has just been really cool about the Betterment story and the things that you've told me about is that you guys have been pretty successful, I would say, at pulling off these migrations, like moving from one thing to another and just this really mindful approach. And the one that I know best is the migration from two native apps, iOS and Android, to a Flutter app and all of the complexity around that. And how do you do that without pausing your business for a year or two while you're doing that, right? So how did you do that? You know, getting into that, like maybe double clicking on that one specifically. And then I know we can expand that to some of the other projects you guys have been working on. You know, where was Betterment at the time? What problems were you facing? And what led you to sort of embark on that path and feel like we have to do something to change something for our team?
Yeah, I love the setup. I mean, I think it's really the context for us is it was like late 2019 and we were thinking about 2020 strategy. If only we knew there was a pandemic coming. that's like a fun thing that we could also talk about what we did when that happened. Because it was also right when we were really getting into it with you guys. Mm-hmm.
Right, right.
But it was late 2019 and we were thinking about 2020 strategy and we really wanted to figure out how to make like mobile first feature development and product delivery like our focus for our consumer product line. And the reason for that was that to that point, we had mobile apps, native Android and iOS apps. They were 2020. I think we built them in 2013 originally. So they were like 7-year-old code bases, which, you know, not that means that they're bad, but they had seen a lot of years and had a bunch of road miles on them. They weren't in the best state. And even so, the applications themselves on mobile weren't doing as much as we wanted them to do. We kind of categorize them as like a companion app. We never really wanted it to be that way, but that was really what materialized in terms of like how much we ended up investing in them. They could do the basics of what our product wanted to do. They could sign people up and, you know, they could do what they needed to do for the most part. But every time we built new, really cool, groundbreaking features in our space, that was like mostly on web, right? And a lot of that it was almost like a self-fulfilling, like we weren't investing in it as much on mobile. And then when we wanted to, it was like, well, you're going to need to invest a lot to get a little because the code bases had kind of developed these warts, right? We kind of had somebody introduce me on the team to this concept they'd coined for it or heard called lava layers, where like you kind of have this eruption of an interesting idea that you kind of like start to push through the code base to how to do things differently and presumably better in the way that you build your features. But you don't quite get there. And so it just hardens on top of the other ways that you were doing things previously. And you have like several of these eruptions over time. And now your code base is this like smattering of layers of different strategies of doing things that like no consistency exists really between building features and it makes everything go slower. So anyway, that's more of where we were and where we wanted to be, right? And so we looked at the code bases and we kind of asked ourselves, like, how will we move as fast as our business wants us to move next year if we don't do something drastic? And so, like, naturally, we have a decent, you know, sized team of mobile people doing native Android and native iOS, and they all have super strong opinions about, like, how they would do it differently now if they could start over. And then we start to grapple with, well, big bang rewrites are bad. There's a lot of business cases and technical cases for where they usually don't pan out. And usually the better strategy that we've also learned internally from our transformations has been one of an iterative sort of wrap the thing that you've got in something new and, like, gradually transition your functionality so that you can, like, new stuff is new and old stuff is old, and, like, you can find the transitionary path there. And that then had us say, well, what about cross-platform? That's a thing that's growing. React Native had been through, like, many hype cycles at the time and was sort of on an upswing. Flutter had been emerging as, this isn't like a toy idea. This is like a real thing that people are using to do stuff. BMW had started using it. Mm-hmm. There were tons of international companies that were using it extensively to build, like, their entire mobile strategy. So in wanting to meet customers where they're at and recognizing our technology was behind where we wanted it to be, we opened the door and said, like, okay, what are the cross-platform options? If we're going to do an iterative rebuild, like, can we do an iterative rebuild that doesn't require us to build two new things? Can we build one new thing? And, you know, that's what opened the door. We looked at Kotlin multi-platform. We looked at React Native. We looked at Flutter. And we decided we wanted to do one of them. And we ended up picking Flutter for a lot of reasons. We had kind of put together some evaluation criteria, really early, rough, like, kind of exploratory stuff. And one of the key things that made Flutter stand out was that it had the ability, I think it was, like, other than React Native, a Kotlin multi-platform didn't do this at the time, it had the ability to be, like, an integrated thing. So you were going to build not just, like, the business logic of your user experience and, you know, the core interesting stuff, but also the UI. And that was all going to be done, like, once for both or multiple platforms. Whereas, like, Kotlin multi-platform, it was like, hey, share the business logic, but, like, build the UIs yourselves, which isn't a bad strategy for some. It was just not a good fit for us. And, you know, we had tried React Native a few years before and kind of had a bad taste in our mouths. And so we were apprehensive about going in that direction again. And then we started using Flutter a little bit more, and, like, the IDE experience was really good. It worked with, like, tools people are already familiar with. It was easy to install and get started. It's, like, hard to undervalue how important those things are when you're making, like, a monumental decision to just, like, change your engines out of your plane while you're flying. Like, the foundational bits need to be really good, and they were with Flutter. So yeah, that's a lot of our stuff. And I think we'll talk about more of it in detail.
Yeah. I remember early on, you guys were just very methodical around evaluating the things that would matter to your team. You know, and I think a lot of these new technologies, there's a lot of hype around them, and there's plenty of people that will, like, tell you they're awesome. Oh, you're going to love it. And then there's plenty of people that are like, no serious engineering team would ever use that, you know? And so that sort of, like, discussion that's out there in the world is you have to really evaluate it yourself and really define the criteria and the process for how you're going to go about doing that. And I just thought that I remember observing that in real time as you guys were thinking it through. It wasn't like, this is, nope, we're going to do this and we're going to give it a try. It's like, what is a sequential process we're going to go through to really clarify what we want to learn and validate that, like, is that hype true? Like, okay, hot reload for Flutter. Is that actually really a big, like, productivity boost, or is it just something that's cool that everyone talks about, you know? Yeah.
So, because if I was going to sell it, I would definitely talk about that. But if I'm using it, is that a thing that actually makes a difference to me? And, like, yeah, in reality, those were the things that stood out to us. Wow, that works really well. That does make a big difference in our development experience.
In terms of, I know it was a long time ago now. It's kind of wild to think about, right? You're more than halfway from how old that app was when you decided to redo the native ones. Were there some, just, you know, kind of getting back to that moment, were there some things you saw in that code base that were, like, really clear signs to you? Or, like, what were the symptoms for you besides the sort of strategy of becoming more mobile first? Something was just, like, not, something was wrong that merits this sort of investment, right? Because I think you guys saw that. You're like, okay, we need to be more mobile first. We're lagging behind on features. Yeah. But, you know, doing this is not a non-trivial investment. It requires a lot of alignment. Were there like some really obvious like things that were just like failing the smell test that you guys were like, oh, this is just not going to be scalable long run? Like, how do you make that call?
Well, it's really interesting. I wasn't working on mobile at the time when I was asked to sort of get involved in this. I think my role was like principal engineer. I was maybe like one of two principal engineers at the company, and having specialized a lot in like front end and full stack development, I had a lot of familiarity with our mobile stuff, but hadn't really worked in it. And so when I was getting involved in kind of the from the business and technology angle at wanting to do more mobile stuff, I needed to close my knowledge gaps as best I could. And so I went and interviewed like there were like 20 engineers on our team doing mobile stuff at the time. I think I went in like one-on-one for like 45 minutes with every single one of them and just kind of talked about, hey, we want to do this. Here's what the business wants to do. Like, how? What do you think? Can we do that? What's going to slow us down? What do we need to fix? How long do you think that's going to take? Right. And like just asking those kind of questions and engaging people in that process of recognizing that people outside of just the grunts on the ground doing the work recognize that things aren't the way that they need to be for people to be successful. And we will need to fix some of that. And that those conversations produced so much information. Right. It was just like going to the people and being like, what would you fix if you could do it? Right. What would you not do the same way? And they were just like laundry lists of things. That's where I learned about that concept of lava layers and that kind of impression of the code base. So things that stood out, like on Android, we were using like the MVVM pattern, the MVP pattern, two different versions of a different MVP pattern. And, you know, those are like architecture strategies. And those are like pretty clear signs that like the application is not holistically designed. Right. And like, it doesn't have to be. You could be a successful company with a successful product that's like a mess on the inside of the software, but you certainly don't want to be that way. I mean, you want to be successful, but you don't want your code base to be in that state because it does slow you down. It keeps you from onboarding new people because they don't know which way to do a thing. They got to ask somebody, right? So there are a lot of those things. There was a lot of tribal knowledge where you would have to ask somebody to say, I'm building a new feature. Which of these four different strategies should I be using to do that? So, you know, things like that really immediately are like red flags to me with when I think about architecture and an architecture of software's ability to keep you at pace, right? They don't always have to be like bending curves as much as that just needs to be like this architecture is like ready to evolve. It has space for new functionality to be introduced. It is like tolerant to change that needs to be made to the code base, to the product. And there were just a lot of those flags that were not in a good spot.
Yeah, it almost sounds like there's more effort to figure out how to architect and implement a feature than to actually do it, than what does the feature do, you know?
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, you contrast that to good things that you have experience with, and it's like very obvious, right?
But yeah. No, I was going to say, I think someone on the team told me that like one of the apps had a local database, one of them didn't, something like that. You were doing like,
Android had a local database, iOS didn't. Yeah.
And any new thing, you got to not only figure out how does the feature work and define it, but you then have to like put it through its paces of understanding like, okay, how do we actually make it work for this one? And, you know, mobile in particular, I think why there's always been this push for cross or multi-platform solutions is because, you know, you're trying to get the same product into your user's pocket. It's just that there's two of them. There's Android and there's iOS, and you got to be on both, you know? Thank God Windows Phone failed, because imagine if we had three. You know?
Yeah, totally. Windows Phone and Palm WebOS and all the other ones that have floated out there for the years. But yeah, it's been wild to see those things come and go and see what's stuck around and then having to build and support them. It's tough because usually it's not the same people either, right? People specialize across the industry. There are plenty of people who like can hack it on multiple mobile development platforms, but certainly most people don't make their bread and butter on both platforms. They work on one, and they have, you know, those platforms, even when they're done well, don't always agree on the way to build things architecturally. The platforms don't even agree in their concepts, their semantics on exactly how things should work, which makes cross-platform things challenging too sometimes. But certainly like when you're doing native, you got two lead engineers on the project, right? Because you got to figure out how you're going to build it on Android and how you're going to build it on iOS. Mm-hmm. And they got to talk to each other. And as divergent as those architectures are, the strategies look different. The asks look different. Oh, well, we want this API. We want that API. It starts to multiply the amount of effort, or you need like extra specialized people. Like you need to hire people who know how to do both, which is even harder.
And it's not just limited to the engineering team. It's the product management team, the marketing team, because things are different. The QA team, the build trains, like everything, like all that complexity scales. Like I've often thought about, there's this graphic, right, of like the complexity of communication chains. Like if you have two nodes, it's one line. Yep. If you have three, it's a triangle. If you had four, you know, all of a sudden it's a box with a X in the middle. And I often think about that as like a team, as you add more people to your team. But then what happens when every single one of those dots on that thing is actually a team of people as well, right? And now you've got like 64 teams. Right? Yep. It's just, it gets, so I have often thought like part of this is just reduction of complexity of people collaborating is a huge benefit. You know,
obviously. Yeah. And speaking the same language, right? It's the same I was saying earlier, right? Like we think about how do we have fewer technology stacks to build our stuff, right? If we had Java and Scala and .NET and Ruby and Python, like we got to be good at all those things. And then those people need to work with each other and they don't necessarily use the same terms, right? So the fewer of those things you can have, it's the same thing. The communication overhead goes down. The more transferable people are, the more they can move from one space to the other, the bigger business impact an individual or a team can have because they can maybe move around a little bit more through the things that they're working on.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of advantages.
So you identify these opportunities and just want to highlight what you said before too, I think, which is just super brilliant that some people should take away is when you identify these things that are kind of smelling funny and you're heading these impediments and you're frustrated. Oh, why don't we ship faster? Or, you know, why does it take 6 months to change a logo or something like that? To actually go down and do the research to talk to the team, like just go down and do that to generate insight. I think that's probably something that a lot of people higher up in chains probably aren't doing as much, like going down and actually talking to the people who are living it every day, because that's where you're getting those insights, those lava layer problems. And you might see the symptoms like or the problems in the organization, but getting lower level, I mean, insight and doing that sort of user research of the team is super, super valuable. So how did you then, like once you sort of identified that there was this problem and maybe this opportunity, how did you get organizational buy-in, right? I mean, obviously it's, you can point to these problems, but I think sometimes they're very vague, right? In scope or scale, or it's hard to quantify. Like, okay, how much productivity are we losing every year to teams just coordinating, right? Or those sorts of impacts. But what probably you can look at very closely is, well, we're going to need to train the team. We're going to need to invest in this new thing. We're going to have to like hire new engineers. Like those are things that I think most businesses are much better at planning is like into the future. What is this going to cost in terms of headcount, time, and everything else? So how did you like go about getting the organizational buy-in to embark on something as significant as this?
Yeah, well, it certainly helped that the business saw this sort of this desire to be building features mobile first, like meeting our customers where they were, right? They had, I don't have the exact numbers off on the top of my head, but we found that like the vast majority of our customers were using our mobile product for their majority of their interactions with us. And it was like a vastly, you know, narrower experience than what you could do on web. And, you know, many things in our mobile product would sort of say like, hey, go do this on web. And that worked for people, right? I think finance was always kind of this thing that people were more inclined to do on a full computer, you know, big screens for big problems or something like that. But because so many more people were using it on mobile, like the business had an appetite for a solution that was going to be better than when we could look backward, right? And say, well, how long did it take us to do feature X on mobile? That's when we said it was going really well, right? That took 3 months. And like, we want to do like 10 of those features next year. And there aren't 30 months in a year. So we're going to have a bad time. How can we do something differently? And what would it cost us? Right. And so then it becomes like a kind of classic business case of like return on investment. What's the investment? How quickly will we get the return? And, you know, how risky is this? Right. Are we going to be successful or is this going to be an investment that flops or something like that? So we were able to draw on like past experiences. So I think I mentioned we had kind of heritage of doing some transformational changes on our technology and kind of seeing the benefits and had some, you know, rough guidance for how long various things would take. And we had started to develop at the time a framework for thinking about these things. Now we kind of refer to it as like the life cycle of a tech investment. We got to come up with like a cute name for it. but, you know, maybe expect that if I ever write a blog post about it. But, you know, we say the life cycle of tech investment or of a tech investment, and sort of framing it up to the business and the people working on it as there's four phases. There's like exploration. And between each phase, there's like a decision, right? So there's like exploration, and then you decide, are we going to go to the next phase or are we done? And then there's like a pilot, then there's an adoption phase, and then there's like a cleanup phase. And sort of along the way, you're like getting more information. I have this like poorly formed expression that I, or adage that I've coined and people I work with, of like, well, you never know less than when you start your project. As soon as you work on anything on a project, like whatever the first step is, you learn something new. Sometimes it's like, oh, well, this project is not going to be successful, right? Or sometimes it's like, this project is going to take longer than we thought. Sometimes it's going to take less time. It's going to have different steps, whatever it is. And so that's why exploration is at the front of the, or the top of the funnel. It's, we're always looking for challenges. We're always looking for opportunities to solve for the pains of those challenges. And looking at, you know, big challenge, like how can we do mobile faster was out there, and cross-platform was an opportunity. And we said, how would we know if we should do that? And we went and did what I referred to before, looking at the technologies that were out there, seeing what their adoption looked like, talking to people in our network. And all that was in the interest of, is there a there? And mitigating the risk, reducing the risk before we make a case for the business to say, let's do this thing. And we got to the point where we were like, look, we think based on these companies that are using this, these network, you know, stories that we have about people's success, that we should try putting a team of people, maybe four people and some, and, you know, some consulting resources on piloting, building a feature a different way for mobile. We would like to give it this sort of time, you know, box, the resources I mentioned, and like, this is the thing that we want to deliver. If we can deliver it in that time and we like what we got, we'll learn something about whether we should go to the next phase of an investment. And so that sort of strategy is really often appealing, you know, to the business-minded people, because it gives them the opportunity to sort of think about, you know, funding something like, you know, okay, I'll put this much in. And if I like where it's headed, I can decide to make further investment or I can not, right? Like, even if we loved it, piloting Flutter, the business could still choose to say, that's great. Maybe we'll invest in it later. And it kind of gives you this opportunity to kind of like stage and mitigate the risk incrementally. And that was like, I would say that's sort of like the biggest trick to it, right? Is just figuring out how to make space to do the exploration and how to advocate enough for a legitimate resource pilot to determine whether you should go further.
Those stages also help to minimize the perceived investment and cost, right? So, because exactly. If you come to them and you're like, okay, this is going to be a multi-year project for this many millions of dollars, it's very easy for finance or anyone, an executive, to be like, I don't know about that right now. But if you prove it along in like bite-sized chunks that you can kind of start to get a taste for it and evaluate it, the sequential investments are more palatable and you can invest in that and decide and then move forward. And I think sometimes, and we see this, right? Companies wait until it's a major burning serious issue. And then they go through a complex process because it's so hard to get buy-in and decision-making where you got to have to paint this giant picture. And it's this huge multi-year transformation project. And those tend also not to go super great sometimes. So, yeah.
And sometimes even if you get them done, you don't feel great afterward, right? There's such a slog, such a journey that like, you know, you just wonder what you could have spent the time on otherwise, right? Yeah. Was it actually worth it in the end?
And if you're not validating along the way, I think one of the fears, especially in a Flutter migration or something like this, it's like, well, how do I know I'm not going to end up with a new thing that has the same problems, you know?
Yeah.
But this gives you a way to sort of validate that too. Are we actually like resolving some of the problems that we identified in our evaluation criteria and our exploration and validating that we're continuing to improve on those problems along the way?
Yeah, that's a big piece of it. Yeah, so that's a lot of it. And then once you go to a pilot, right, you need to go into that pilot with like structure, right? So that you can come out of it with something to say other than my gut says do it. I mean, sometimes that's all you've got, but that's actually less often the case than people would like to pretend it is.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and with that pilot, I think if I recall correctly, you guys wanted to build out like a checking feature. Is that right? Was that the first pilot or was that not really the pilot? No, the pilot was...
we had just finished building a bunch of stuff. So 2019, we built like a new line of business for like a checking product. Mm-hmm. And we had built like individual account setup. So you could sign up for a checking account as a person, like one person. And we had the plan to do joint checking signup. So multiple people could sign up for an account together. And that was like one of the big features we wanted to build in the first half of 2020. To kind of like continue to build on the success of that product line and be able to target more customer use cases. But in order to do that, we also were looking at our signup experience and saying, okay, so like we should rebuild that in order to be more modular. It was like a long, like 20-step signup process and it needed to change. And so we decided to do a pilot with Flutter, and we decided to say like, well, we're not going to do the new stuff. But what we will build is a modernized version that's modular of our signup experience. And we'll build it with Flutter, and we'll use their add to app functionality to integrate it into our existing app. And we'll give ourselves, I think we said like 10 weeks, like just less than the first quarter of the year, to build the pilot and get it released to our customers, which was ambitious because there was like a lot of stuff to figure out. Enough stuff to figure out, we learned, just building a Flutter app from scratch, but then using add to app and then also integrating it into our app, which was like a non-trivial app with a lot of weird stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's that was the first app, and that was a lot of the strategy.
That side, the add to app side. I mean, that's definitely a key feature, I think, of Flutter. And it's an interesting dynamic. Like I remember these conversations around blue sky, greenfield, brownfield, like how do you go about doing this? I think most engineers want to be like, yeah, let's start fresh, you know, brand new. And yep. That's just not really the reality for most businesses to be able to do that. And also you might make a lot of mistakes. There's a lot of things built into the existing app that are really hard to make sure you get brand new in the new one, you know? And but that add to app experience, I know that it's not necessarily the cleanest way to get an exposure to Flutter. So how did you guys manage that, given that now you're kind of introducing this like new technology into these two apps that we just established had kind of these architectural problems and some issues? Like, how did you insulate the team around that and make sure that people still saw the value, not added complexity of what we were doing?
Yeah, it was really interesting. So the pilot process involved like building evaluation criteria. And like the fundamental thing we wanted to say was like, is building a feature with Flutter as good as or better on average than building with both or either of our existing strategies? Because if it's as good as and it's less total work that needs to be done and fewer different things that need to be thought through how to build, that's actually better intrinsically, right? It's a better state to be in. It would be a better set of trade-offs to take on. So then that was like an important part that we had to establish sort of early with our team too, right? Is we want to keep the people here. We don't want to lose all of our engineers because they don't want to do cross-platform, or like they feel like this is forced on them or something like that. So we had to bring everybody into the process. And that was kind of like, what's important? Let's talk about what the criteria are that we care about that define what goodness looks like for building the software. Because it's bigger than like a language or a platform, right? These are qualities of the software that like exist in multiple platforms. And you know, and back in the day, you didn't have any choice, and now you have some choice. So let's see if this one's worth picking. So that was like sort of key for both knowing that we were building something that was good and being able to get people to be aligned with the decision to adopt it if we wanted to go forward. And then add to app was, as you kind of mentioned, like it was a very interesting challenge. We wanted to get like that really great, what does it actually feel like to do Flutter, the Flutter way experience. And so we took this approach where we basically built a Flutter experience, like Flutter create with the add to app strategy, but like in a separate thing with like a dummy runner Flutter app, and just built the Flutter experience, like built the sign up, did all the software development. So it was like really fast development pace, like exactly what like the demos of building a brand new Flutter app are. And that was what our development experience was, building that feature along the way. So we could kind of know, this is what it's going to really feel like when we get to the promised land of this thing. And then as we got near to the end of the project, like maybe sort of the midway, we started actually doing the work to say, well, how will we integrate this add to app thing into our real app? And then, you know, that was where we were very strategic in picking like an experience in our product that where you weren't like authenticated yet. So you don't have to like deal with like secure storage and like being logged in and all this stuff. Proxying that through all the craziness of our existing stack. And so really what we needed to do was be like, how do we get like a view controller or a presenter or something that can launch the Flutter experience at the right time based on a button click and make sure it all works integrated and that the right thing happens when you're done. And that was like all we had to do in terms of the complexity of managing add to app in the pilot. And it was just enough to know, like, is this possible and how hard will it be to do more? And as well as what does it look like when you're like really just doing Flutter development? And, you know, both of those things was like, it's not that bad on the add to app side. Like it's complicated, but like it's doable. And we can like maybe framework away where the pain existed. And like the Flutter experience was like top notch. It was great. It was better than our current native development experiences because we weren't able to use like the latest and greatest experiences at the time. And Swift UI wasn't even really a thing much yet and all that. So
nice. And you mentioned the team in there a little bit, right? That's a big aspect of these types of changes, especially when you're changing a stack or adding some new technology. What did you do? You mentioned you kind of brought them into the story, but like, how did you bring them along for the ride? Like, how did you get them to skill up, but also wrangle some of the feelings around identity, right? That comes along with some of this stuff. Because obviously you need the team on board. Like you said, you don't want to lose people because of this choice. But at the same time, their lives are probably a little painful dealing with these things. So how did you balance them and bring them along?
It's really interesting to navigate these things because you kind of need, like, we go back to the business case part of the discussion. Like when you want to do something like this, you need to provide enough of a glimpse of what the future looks like and what the migration path is. Even though at the same time, you need to hold in your head, like this is like a hypothesis, right? It might never come to pass, but you really need to think out into the future in order to be able to talk to like the non-technical, non-nerd people about this, or at least the people that nerd out on maybe the finance or the business cases and not this stuff. But it turns out that doing that thinking is also really great for talking to the nerds when they're nervous about what it means for them, right? Am I going to get, are we going to fire everybody? And let's, well, no, like we put together like an FAQ, right? For people, what does this mean? What will, if we do the pilot, what is that going to look like? And what happens if the pilot is like green lit to go to adoption, right? And that means we're going to do training. So we actually had to factor that into the pitch and the plan before we even started a pilot. It also creates this tension of sort of, it's like fait accompli, right? It's destined to happen. You did all this work. We're definitely going to do it. And you spend a decent amount of time reminding people that like, this could not be what we want to do. But if it is, we need to be ready. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of just like preparedness and carrying that the right way in your team and your conversations about it help a lot. Like you have to believe that this is a pilot and we will explore it and we know where we go next, at least approximately, and we're going to go together. And that's the journey that we're on. And like being able to talk to the team about that and communicate what we're learning as we go and reassure them that like part of this is like there's a training plan. So I mentioned that before, and I think you maybe referred to it as like, we said, well, in going into a pilot, let me rewind. We said, we don't know Flutter. We could figure this out on our own, but that's yet another risk and another layer of stuff that we have to do. What would we do to mitigate that? And we connected with you at VGV to say, hey, you're experts in Flutter. You probably haven't really done much with add to app. You fortunately had just enough experience in it to be extra helpful on that front too. But we wanted to bring you all in as experts to say, we're also going to know that for the time investment that we get in this, that we're spending it focused on our problems and not Flutter problems or generic problems that like somebody solved and we just have to find them on the internet or figure out for ourselves. Let's talk about the betterment business problems that we're trying to solve with this software. So like you're going to kind of layer these things together, right? You say, like, okay, we're going to do a pilot. We're going to bring some expertise in to help us to like move fast and avoid the pitfalls that are obvious to somebody who's used this before. We're going to put together evaluation criteria. We're going to provide updates to the team as we go of what we're learning, what we like, what we don't like. We're going to make a final decision once we get to the end if we are able to actually deliver the thing. Because there's a risk, maybe we might fail. We might fully fail and just not get it done on time. What are we going to do if we're not done? Are we going to keep going? So, you know, having answers to those questions are really important. And that's okay. So when we're done, we're putting it in production. We also need to be like, what do we do if we put it in production? It's fine, but we decide we don't want to keep it. Now it's like another lava layer, right? So like we had to have some commitment to we're going to unwind it then, right? And we'll have to go forward with a new strategy and figure out what that investment looks like.
Right.
You know, so anyway, that those are like a bunch of the pieces that fit into it. And then like somewhere along the way was like, okay, well then once we pick it, we need to say, like, when will we agree to pause for 2 weeks, train the team, build something together useful, get everybody to learn how the fundamentals and get like some experience. And then how will we like do adoption? Formulating like an iterative adoption plan was like a big piece of success for this project, as well as other adoptions we've done, which is like a huge piece of just, like, you have a bunch of experts that worked on this thing or like piloted the technology. It's a bad move to say, okay, now everyone use it for everything new. You have to sort of train everybody. Sure, you can do that up front and say, okay, now sit on everything you learned. There's four teams. We're going to stack them up. The first team, we're going to bring the experts in and we're going to work with you to build a thing the new way. And we're going to learn stuff. We're going to make improvements to the technology stack that everybody else will subsequently benefit from. And like, you know, it's not entirely different from like consulting, right? We were doing internal consulting and contract work, help them build the thing, get the skill, get the affinity for it, and then move on to the next project because we didn't have the capacity to help six people or four teams at the same time. And then, you know, that team is now living the future and the rest of the teams keep doing it the old way. And that tension is also a fun one to observe. It's, oh, wait, but we want to do a new thing, but for some period of time, we're still going to build new features because we can't stop building features and we're going to do it the old crusty way, right? And like, you have to live in that duality. That's how the business continues to be successful and you don't stop all the things. And, you know, ultimately, often, I think if you do try to do that, you usually fail because you can't support everybody. You can't do it all at the same time.
I remember those trainings too. I remember you guys explaining that or kind of having this vibe that it was this kind of cool cultural moment for everybody too, because it's not that often in our careers where we as a team take like a break, do something all new, learn something new together. Maybe going back to what we were talking about, kids, like sort of learning something new and how exciting it is to learn something new for the first time. And I remember after that training, there was this like kind of interesting, at least my recollection of it, there was a positive culture bump of people being like, oh, cool, we did this together. We had this almost team building exercise where we're learning some new technology and wrapping our heads around what our future will look like together. And I thought that was just a really interesting strategy. Of course, you have to do the training, but also to kind of like really embrace it as this is kind of like a good moment to rally the team around what we're doing if we're going to go forward with this.
Yeah, exactly. It's like that. It's classic sort of team building stuff, but if it, you know, in hands-on and like really feel like you're producing something. And we kind of found like a hack, which was like we did a week of like workshops and like throwaway training material content. And then a second week where we're like, now we're going to take everything we learned and we're going to, everybody together is going to build components for our design system. Cause we tried to follow a design system and it was like, great. It's like really isolated ways for people to build something real that we're going to use in Flutter. And they all get a taste and then they all go back to working on whatever they were working on before. And eventually they'll all come back to Flutter. And it just made such a huge difference of people being like, almost it created the demand, right? They were like, it was able to dispel people's concerns, validate, you know, concerns that were founded and figure out how we would mitigate those and create a desire to, there's somewhere better than I'm going to go back to some of the stuff that's crusty, but the future is coming and it's good actually. And that psychology is really important to consider, right?
Totally. Yeah. No one wants to work on the old and crusty. You want to work on the new and hot.
Yeah, like you just learn over time that people like, you know, they want to be upskilled, right? They want to learn new things. There's this fear that people are curmudgeonly and just stuck in their ways. And I always felt like that was very strongly pronounced in the mobile world, just like everybody was in their camps, like nativist camps. But then, you know, I talked to people and like the reality was that people are very open-minded. They just held strong opinions, right? And they had fear for change in the ways that everybody does. Like change management is like a skill that, you know, individuals and organizations, both giving and receiving and making change, all need to practice to get good at. And so, yeah, it's hard to overinvest in that kind of stuff.
Totally. Yeah, there's so much identity trapped in that. And I think it's really dangerous, right? And I think you see the natural progression of this where I think Flutter engineers can really just be considered as product engineers because, oh, you want me to build for the web now or Linux or whatever else, and you have this power in that technology. And I think it's even a danger to call it a Flutter engineer, because also like with all the talk about AI and what happens when one day you just go in and you enter a prompt, you know, and it's like spits out a code or something, right? I see Flutter as like a natural progression, just like how do we make it easier for engineers to accomplish their objectives, right? And not be so dogmatic about the tool, right? So just what about the sort of like, so fast forward, you know, and then I know there was a big process to kind of, you know, continue to implement and follow through and do cleanup and stuff. But as you went through that process and now you've got, you know, is the app fully Flutter now at this point, or where did you get to?
Yeah. So I think that's the other fun part, right? Is and crucial piece of this like tech investment lifecycle is that it doesn't stop once you pilot, and it definitely doesn't stop once you start adoption. You need to actually get everybody adopting it, sure. That's the easy part. The hard part is the cleanup. The hard part is like, you know, we have this framework, the lifecycle of a tech investment, that kind of talks about the return on investment at each stage. Right. And we talked about mitigating risk, and the return on the investment is nothing until you get to the end of a pilot, at which like maybe you did something quickly or something. But even then, it's usually negative. Right. You're still just investing. And then when adoption starts, you start to get some benefits. But with these sort of, you know, incremental rewrite things, you're not getting the full benefit. You know, we call it like when we're full Flutter, like this will be better. That will be better. This other thing will be better. You get the isolated benefits, but like certain things still have a cost that's painful. You know, we still had to test things in add to app mode where everything was integrated. When we would build new features, we devised like a strategy for being able to build like in a standalone app that was like a Flutter dummy app that we would like launch and log into with a dummy login feature because we hadn't migrated our login experience yet. And so you'd like log in and it would get you an auth token. And then we'd launch features with little buttons that we built. And then you'd build all the things out Flutter first, and then you'd integrate them in the add to app experience and test it. And that was painful and stinky. It was not a good experience. It worked. It was totally doable. But it was like the contrast was constantly there, which was also a good reminder and incentive to like keep going and do the cleanup work. But you really do need to prioritize the cleanup work, because it's not until you get to like you don't do it two ways anymore. You just do it one way, the new way, that you fully manifest all the benefits. So cleanup is a huge part of it. It's the easiest part to give up and not like power through. And we've learned those lessons too, of like spending years not being done. Now we are full Flutter, with the exception of one feature or something that's like a web view based experience, or one or two features, you know, a handful of features that just like they're not frequently used. And so we're getting all the benefits, right? Like even that web view feature, like it's not foundational infrastructural pieces that are in the way anymore. Now it's like the legacy thing, but it's like nicely isolated and it doesn't get in anybody's way. And the benefits are there. Like we get to do all sorts of interesting things. Like we recently built a new fancier test runner for doing like parallel test execution in Dart. And like we just need to run Dart tests now. We don't need to run iOS tests and Android tests and Dart tests. And so it streamlines so many things for you, where you don't need to support multiple platforms. You can make optimizations. You can embrace the choices that you've made. So, you know, on the impact of the engineering team, it's really great. You know, that was a journey. I think it took us like until like 2022 or something, you know, almost two full years from idea to being full Flutter, right? And you can accelerate that if you can choose to invest more, but you kind of continuously get more benefit as you go.
So there's all these benefits on the engineering team now that you've got that process behind you and a couple of years now of like living in the future. What have been the impacts on the overall like business of Betterment beyond the engineering team?
I mean, there's tons of customer win to it, right? Like the customer value is, we got it. I mean, it's easy to sound like it's hyperbolic, but it takes less time to build stuff, right? Like we love that. Like we did a hackathon last year. We do like an annual hackathon. And, you know, one of the teams was like a mobile parody team. And they just wanted to see if they could build like a bunch of missing features into the mobile app that are still on web that we just haven't gotten to building on mobile yet. They built like five features in like a week. And, you know, they're not like the most complicated features, but they're more, you know, it's not just like adding a button to a screen, or it's like a screen, you click a button, you open it, it goes through a flow and talks to some APIs. Like they were able to do that with three, four people in a week, right? And it used to take us multiple weeks just to build one feature. And so the massive improvement to that is great for everybody. It's great for customers. It's more stuff we can deliver. More features can be built on mobile. the quality of the user experience is higher. It's more consistency across Android and iOS. You know, there were always these, we would have to design for two platforms, and usually the designer would build iOS or something because they used iOS. And then we would just be like, what should Android do here or something? And now it's mostly the same. We have a design system. It doesn't take very long to just add ideas and prototype, which are, again, all really good things for the customer. It's not really a companion app anymore. It's not at full parity with our web experience, but that's just like a matter of time. Whereas before it was like, we might never get there. And that really speaks to it. And we do deliver features on mobile first, you know, not every one, but tons of them, right? Which is really cool. And then, yeah, the business has been able to target the customers where they are. We have the ability to say, we want to build this mobile first, or even only mobile, like a feature just for mobile. We have like remote check deposit for our checking thing, checking product. And that's like a mobile only feature. That stuff is really cool.
That's awesome. So many good benefits, you know, and I think it's so many focus on the buy one, get one free of Flutter sometimes and sort of the cost savings, but it's all these other organizational benefits. And I think it's important we don't lose sight of the goal of what we're trying to accomplish with these products. What we're not trying to do is save money on engineering resources or time. That's not the goal. The goal is to like deliver a better product to our customers faster. You know, like that's the goal. It's just that technology is what we need. And sometimes managing our technology gets in the way of that. And sometimes it's like so much emphasis focused on how do we do it or the barriers and obstacles to getting things done. We lose sight of like why we're doing it in the first place, you know, which is making our customers happy.
Yeah. And, you know, we as a business, we also got the experience of like how to do this, right? Mm. Again, like this was maybe another one of the really big transformations we've done. But like now we're doing more transformational stuff now. We're adopting React and like rich single page app experiences for web. We've been adopting GraphQL for API services. And I get product and design people talking to other people, but when we did Flutter, we kind of did this and that worked really well. Right. And so like, you know, there's a part of our business, like Fabric, where like we can refer back to these experiences, you know, for people who are around for them, as well as people who kind of came along as they were happening to kind of create these cultural elements of like how to think about stuff. And so it's sort of like an accelerant in that front too.
Yeah. It gives you confidence, right? I mean, I think confidence is such an important attribute of just an individual, but also a company, right? And so if you start getting into the situation where you're like, it's too hard, it's going to take too long, I don't think we can actually do that, that's like the death of your progress of companies, right? So I mean, it sounds like not only do you have confidence now in your technology that you built, both Flutter and other stacks you've built and maintained, but the organization has confidence to navigate through those changes and those transformations, right? Which I think is probably the stronger value in the long run, because things are going to keep changing. You're going to have to keep evolving and migrating and moving forward. So that's great that it's kind of given you that organizational strength.
Yeah, you got to be willing to take risks, right? And you got to be able to sort of see like how big a risk really is, right? And one of the engineers I work with, he has sort of a phrase of, he'll just say, well, how hard could it be, right? It's just a reminder that you got to take that first step. You got to trust that like maybe it's not as hard as it seems like it could be. And doing it is one of the best, you know, recipes for being able to know that you could do another thing or a bigger thing.
So take us home. What are some sort of key advice or kind of, do you have summary learnings that when you talk about this and these things that you've done, the framework you've come up with, your life cycle of, what was it? Technology, tech investment, life cycle of a tech investment. What are some of the key takeaways or things you guys talk about internally that you could share?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's a whole bunch that I could rattle off. I mean, I think having alignment between the technology part of the org and the business part of the org is really important. And that you want to focus on doing right for the customer, right? And if you center the customer along the way, you kind of have this product mindset, then it gives you this like shared space to talk about, you know, well, how is doing this or not doing this going to make a difference in that area? And it helps you kind of understand that's where your shared values are. But like, it turns out that like the organizational parts of this are harder than the technical parts. Hmm. The technical parts are hard, but they're also structured. They're like tangible. Right. They hit you in the face, whereas the organizational parts, they sneak up behind you. Right. if you're not looking out for them. So it's like really important to come in with a plan. Right. You got to get your commitment from the business that you're going to make this kind of investment. You can't begin exploring things that you're not going to be able to afford to resource. And you don't want to pilot a thing that you're not going to follow through on. Like all this sort of things that are in this life cycle of a tech investment, right? Exploration, piloting, adoption, and cleanup. Like you don't want to adopt a thing if you can't see a path to mm-hmm. investing and cleaning it up. And they sort of just all stack together. Those are big things for me. You know, on the cleanup front, somebody I work with likes the, you know, everybody wants to go to the party, but nobody wants to stay and clean up. And I think that's real. That's a cultural thing that exists in our world. That's part of our collective psyche. And so you really have to formulate this into the plan. Like, we got to do it. It's going to happen. It's going to be annoying, but you don't get to have the party if you don't clean up the space, right? And I think the other big piece of it that was a learning for us is like the work is never done. So as you're going through it, like you got to really find a way to embrace the journey of it and recognize that once you climb this hill or realize, you know, this mountain is actually just a hill and you see the next peaks, like you got to go there too, right? Like for us, adopting Flutter helped shed light on the other problems that we had, the other challenges that we needed to solve, the next layer of things that were going to slow us down. You know, for us, it was like web versus mobile dichotomy of how we built software. And not building APIs meant it didn't matter if we had the best front-end mobile tech stack. If we couldn't get the data or, you know, create data, then like we were going nowhere. And so, you know, those are other learnings to just recognize these are all steps in a journey and it's all part of some you know, so like bigger picture.
Cleaning up the mobile process helps to clear the view for getting after the other problems that are deeper in the stack or other things inhibiting the growth
right.
of the org.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, cool.
Yeah. And from a technical perspective, I like to start with the customer. And I also like to start with the thing the customer sees, which is the UI, and just like work toward the back of the system from there. Because sometimes, you know, the other way is fraught. Both ways are fraught, but the other way is often more fraught in that like you go and build the best API and like there's no one there to consume it, right? You can't rely on if you build it, they will come, right? Like the field of dreams is not how these things work. Right. You need to create the adoption. You need to recruit the people to do the work. You need to sell them what they're actually looking for. So it's all really important. And starting with the customer is usually the best way to kind of center that right part of the narrative and focus on the right things first. It doesn't mean that you have to ignore that other problems exist, but certainly it helps to be like a guiding strategy for, you know, how to pick where to start.
Very insightful. Well, Sam, this has been awesome. I think your story and not only the Flutter experience, but what you guys have done as a business managing all these tech transformations. I've always been very keen to help you and collaborate with you to get these stories out. Because when I get to hear about them and talk to you about the things you're doing, I'm like, whoa, more people need to be aware of this because so many companies are facing these technical challenges and they blame the tools or the technology or the market or whatever. And sometimes it's, well, no, we just need a mindful process to go through this to continually improve and get better. And you've been a great collaborator of us. So thank you for having this conversation. I know we've worked on, there's a webinar people can find that we've done together. We've created some guides around migrating to Flutter in the past and collaborated on that. And just really appreciate you continuing to share these thoughts. And I personally love to hear that sort of that next step that is like this Flutter migration you did, this process you went through, that process becomes repeatable and you're doing it for other things. So it's not just this one-time skill that you like, it's like you're training to do the Olympics one time and then like it's over and you're never going to do it again. It's like, no, actually like going through that process, yes, you're creating an improvement to your mobile stack, but also you're creating this organizational capability and comfort and confidence to do more of it on other stacks and other parts of the business. And that's just really cool. So yeah, just wanted to thank you for coming and telling the story and hopefully we get a chance to do more of it.
Yeah. I mean, I want to thank you for inviting me on to tell the story and being such a wonderful host, asking great questions and giving me a lot to think about. So appreciate the opportunity.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Sam. Appreciate it very much. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, David.
Thank you for joining us on Build to Succeed, a Very Good Ventures podcast. We hope you enjoyed exploring the insights and experiences of leaders who have mastered the art of building successful tech products. Please feel free to leave us a review wherever you listen to the podcast, and don't forget to subscribe to us for more episodes.